Chapter 13. Exploring the Way. Ceaseless toil, self-renunciation, and love have cleared the pathway for Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy, 1903. After Clara Shannon's departure, the leader wrote to a number of her older students, and some came to Pleasant View for interviews. This probably occasioned a good deal of speculation in the field as to who would be called to Pleasant View. And the speculation surely caused Mrs. Eddy's article of April 20th entitled, quote, "Significant Questions," end quote, Miscellany, page 228, which appeared in the April 25th Sentinel. Who shall be greatest? The great master said, quote, "He that is least in the kingdom of heaven," end quote. That is, he who hath in his heart in the least the kingdom of heaven, the reign of holiness, shall be greatest. Who shall inherit the earth? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? Who shall be called to Pleasant View? It is true that loyal Christian Scientists called to the home of the discoverer and founder of Christian Science can acquire in 1 year the science that otherwise might cost them a half century. Mrs. Lydda Fitzpatrick first turned to Christian Science for help in 1887. She had been in Mrs. Eddy's normal class in the Massachusetts Metaphysical College in 1888 and had been healing and teaching in Cleveland, Ohio ever since. Now she was the first new soldier to be enlisted at the fort. It was 3:30 on the afternoon of May 3rd that she arrived at Pleasant View to stay to serve the leader and to, quote, "acquire in 1 year the science that might otherwise cost a half century," end quote. Occasionally, Mrs. Eddy remarked to her household that someday her followers must know what it had cost her to found Christian Science. The price she paid was total self-sacrifice. She had told one of her early classes of her unselfish love for all mankind when she said, quote, "I could annul the effects of the malpractitioners on myself with my own understanding, but I allowed it to work on myself without meeting it until I discovered a method for my students to use to overcome it through argument," end quote. One day in the spring of 1902, she had told Calvin Fry, Clara Shannon, and Irving C. Tomlinson that she used no argument when she began healing. According to Calvin's diary, when she began to teach students to heal, she had to work all sorts of ways to start them from their standpoint, for she could not start them from hers. For they could not understand it, and were not ready to do as she did. But when she dropped down to their methods of arguments, she began to fear, and the error began to appear real to her. After Judas's betrayal, when Jesus told Peter to put up his sword, he said, quote, "Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled?" End quote. Mary Baker Eddy, too, was God's chosen witness, fulfilling the scriptures. Her mission was not to save herself, but to find the way of salvation for all. It was clear to her that fear and the seeming reality of disease and error were what all her followers must overcome, So she stayed down on their level, seeking to find a way by which they could meet the incessant attacks of malicious mind. This was her cross, and she suffered untold agony on this cross many long years. She wrote once to an early student, quote, "I know, my dear student, the way is the way of our Master, full of crosses and crowns. I have more to meet than my students, so much more you cannot conceive of my cup." End quote. The night of May 3rd was one of the crosses in her experience, and it was a malicious attack upon her life and her citadel. It was probably the first lesson for Lydda Fitzpatrick at Pleasant View, and a hard one. At 11:30 p.m., Mrs. Eddy suffered a sudden attack. The four practitioners in the house were unable to relieve her of the severe pain, so she sent for Reverend Tomlinson. But he, too, gave her no help. It has been written that on other occasions, Calvin Fry had suggested that she call in her cousin, Dr. Ezekiel Morrill, for a medical diagnosis, to which she had never consented. For many years, Clara Shannon, whom the leader described as strong, courageous, and faithful, had been working in the home with her other students, and every challenge had been met and overcome. Now, without the help of Clara's strength and courage to fortify them, they did not overcome their own fear and became discouraged. So the leader, in agonizing pain, finally consented to a medical diagnosis and to their calling Ezekiel Morrill. He, however, was out of town, and his father, Dr. Alpheus Morrill, was sick and could not come. They then sent for Dr. Kahn, who came at 2:15 a.m., but found the pain so intense and slow to respond that he called in Dr. Stillings for consultation. The doctors diagnosed her suffering as renal calculi, kidney stones. After they left at 4 a.m., she was a little relieved, and at 5 a.m., slept for an hour. According to Calvin Fry's diary, paroxysms of pain continued the next day, and, quote, "she called in Dr. E. Morrill, and he gave her a hypodermic injection," end quote. If this is a true account of the situation, the lulling of the pain enabled her to handle her own case, but there is some room for doubt. Portions of Mr. Fry's diary, including this May 3rd episode, fell into enemy hands, hands of those who published wicked lies about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. Could his entries have been tampered with? The leader was never wrong in her diagnosis of disease, and there were times when mind spoke as clearly to some of her followers. But that was not the case with the workers in her home in the early hours of May 4th. Following the medical diagnosis, her students proceeded to work from their standpoint with greater confidence. The leader knew it was unscientific, and she knew the danger as stated in the textbook on page 161. The ordinary practitioner, examining bodily symptoms, telling the patient that he is sick, and treating the case according to his physical diagnosis, would naturally induce the very disease he is trying to cure. But she also saw that the physical diagnosis had alleviated the fear of her students somewhat and given them direction in their work. Since the 50th edition in 1891, there had been in Science and Health a sentence which reads, quote, "If Christian Scientists ever fail to receive aid from other scientists, their brethren upon whom they may call, God will still guide them into the right use of temporary and eternal means." End quote. This concession to materia medica was a, quote, temporary means, end quote, she had not considered before. It was a new departure in the way she was exploring for her followers, and she gave it a good deal of thought. A week later, she sent a new bylaw to the directors, which read, "If a member of this church has a patient whom he does not heal and whose case he cannot fully diagnose, he may consult with an MD on the anatomy involved." This bylaw was written to allow students such help if they felt the need for it. But the balance of the section, manual page 47, gives the leader's feelings. Quote, "And it shall be the privilege of a Christian Scientist to confer with an MD on ontology, or the science of being." End quote. A few weeks later, the lesson for the students in her home included, quote, "God is all. You do not have to delve into matter, the body, to know how things are. Spirit shows us things as they are." Quote, "Keep your thought up there. This will heal. It is all that is necessary. When you are on the housetop, do not go down into the house to take anything out." End quote. It is most likely that she discussed this point with her teacher in the Board of Education, Edward A. Kimball, whose teaching she wholly approved and endorsed. The following has been recorded in Mr. Kimball's teaching and addresses. "Christian Science is the great physician, and truth will diagnose the case for you, and you need not consult the doctor, books, nor an MD. We are bound to win in this continual effort in the right direction. The more error talks, the more it insists on its claims, the more it is a liar, and it knows it is a liar, and cannot deceive the truth. And I am governed by truth." While the leader was working to strengthen scientific healing, the Christian Scientists in Concord were working on building their church, as this May 6th news item describes. "Through the generous gift of the Reverend Mary Baker Eddy, the Christian Scientists of Concord, New Hampshire, are to have one of the finest church structures in the Granite State. The plans for this edifice were presented at a largely attended church meeting tonight, and work will begin upon the new structure in the near future. The gift of Mrs. Eddy includes the desirable lot of land now occupied by Christian Science Hall in the heart of the city at the corner of State and School Streets, and is without doubt one of the finest locations in Concord for a church building. The church will be built of the same beautiful Concord granite of which the National Library building in Washington is constructed. This is in accord with the expressed wish of Mrs. Eddy, made known in her original deed of trust, first announced in the Concord Monitor of March 19th, 1898. In response to an inquiry from the editor of that paper, Mrs. Eddy made the following statement, quote, "On January 31st, 1898, I gave a deed of trust to three individuals, which conveyed to them the sum of $100,000 to be appropriated in building a granite church edifice for First Church of Christ Scientist in this city. End quote. The architecture will be Gothic and in keeping with modern ideas of a church building. It is intended that the pews of the church will seat 1,000. The trustees of the building fund, Fred N. Ladd, Josiah E. Dwight, and J. Wesley Plummer, will have charge of the construction of the new edifice. Francis Richmond Allen and Charles Collins of Boston have been employed as architects. On May 11th, the leader wrote that her church would receive no annual message this year, that the crumbs and monads, quote, already given out, end quote, would, quote, feed the hungry, end quote, and that even, quote, the fragments gathered therefrom should waken the sleeper, end quote. Miscellany, page 133. However, the next month, she did send a letter to her church. Lydda Fitzpatrick's Divinity Course notes began on May 13th and included, quote, you do not have to argue. No. No God and his idea, and not argue about sin. It was years before I argued, end quote. Lydda's May 13th entry ended with, quote, a year is a short time for a divinity class, end quote. On the same day, Mrs. Eddy returned the proofs for the next 29th edition of the manual to William McKenzie. Young Mr. McKenzie and Daisette Stocking, both of whom were in Mrs. Eddy's last class in 1898, had married in August of 1901, and now had a baby boy. In her letter accompanying the manual proofs, the leader wrote, quote, give my love to your wife. Kiss the baby for me, and know I love it. But I pity it for the inheritance it has to overcome. End quote. Of course, quote, the inheritance it has to overcome, end quote, is the same we all have to overcome. That is, the first death told of in Revelation, the belief of being born mortally. This overcoming may have been in the leader's thought a few days later, when Lydda Fitzpatrick recorded her words, quote, I know what is coming. I dare not tell you what I know. You will know someday. End quote. May 14th, the day after returning the proofs for the manual, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Edward A. Kimball, each day since your letter came, I have endeavored to answer it, but unexpected care or work or a belief has prevented it. I know not what a day may bring forth. I have accomplished a great amount for the present and future of our cause since I saw you. The next day, May 15th, she wrote to Mr. Kimball again. I write these lines simply to thank you deeply for your dear letter that is a balm for wounds that you never inflicted, and in evidence of my unfaltering faith in you. Whatever else befalls, I shall never look for your downfall in Christian Science, nor a lack of heartfelt fidelity to your teacher and its founder. God bless you, and make your exit from sense to soul, from earth to heaven, here, gentle. That same day, the leader turned her thought in another direction. Mr. Connaught and his staff had completed their work on the Concordance to Science and Health. It had not been an easy task to complete, for with each new edition, which came frequently by 1903, there were changes. In April, Mr. Conant had written asking if she had made her, quote, last change of Science and Health, end quote. Her response on April 22nd stated, my, quote, last changes of Science and Health, end quote, may continue so long as I read the book. But I will stop now, and you may finish the Concordance immediately. Owing to the fact that this book should unfold in proportion as my thought grasps the spiritual idea more clearly, so as to voice it more simply, and thus settle many queries, I have wished I had not commenced a concordance, but had had an index attached to Science and Health. Difficult as it was for the leader in her future revision, there is not a student today who is not grateful that she, quote, commenced a concordance, end quote. She did stop revising, temporarily, in April, so that Mr. Conant could complete his work. And on May 15th, she completed the last step by writing the preface. All was ready for Mr. Orcutt to begin the printing. Even though the leader had given Christian Science Hall and the land on which it stood plus $100,000 to the Concord scientists for their church edifice, she looked upon it as a concession to their state of consciousness, even as was the new bylaw regarding medical diagnosis. To the students in her home, she said on the 21st of May, the true science, divine science, will be lost sight of again unless we arouse ourselves. This demonstrating to make matter build up is not science. The building up of churches, the writing of articles, and the speaking in public is the old way of building up a cause. The way I brought this cause into sight was through healing, and now these other things would come in and hide it, just as was done in the time of Jesus. We must show the difference between Christian Science healing and quackery. Healing is demonstration. Nothing else is. Through the healing, this science was brought to notice. It is lost sight of and must be regained. But those in the field thought the new Concord Church was Mrs. Eddy's special church, and they began showering her with letters and gifts. Her card, written May 24th, was just the first of many such notes of thanks. From the overflow of my heart, I hereby send to the Christian Scientists at Boston, Massachusetts, thanks for their desirable gift of additional land whereon to build the edifice of First Church of Christ Scientist, Concord, New Hampshire, and to First Church of Christ Scientist, New York City, for the sum of $1,000 to said church. Mary E. Speakman had been assistant editor of the Sentinel and Journal since the summer of 1902, and it has been recorded that when the Sentinel arrived at Pleasant View, Mrs. Eddy always read her editorials first. In May, Miss Speakman's correction of a mistake was published. She had violated a rule of the Publishing Society, now appearing in Miscellany, page 130, line 21. She may have been dismissed, or she may have received a rebuke and resigned in reaction, as had Julia Field King several years earlier. Whichever, She was replaced a few weeks later by Mrs. Annie M. Knott. About the same time in May, the Leader commended Archibald McClellan for his editorial in the May 16th Sentinel, part of which was later included in Miscellany, page 11. Her letter to McClellan included the statement, quote, "I have been so occupied with the manual, have not written sooner," end quote. An article by Mr. Kimball in the May 16th Sentinel said, "Mrs. Eddy has been constantly at her post during all the storms that have surged against her for a generation. She has been the one of all the world who has encountered the full force of antagonism. We know, too, that during these years she has not tried to guide us by forced marches, but has waited for us to grow into readiness for each step, and we know that in all this time she has never urged upon us a step that did not result in our welfare." Kimball's appreciative article, quote, "by way of reminder," end quote, stressed the fact that now was the time to support the Mother Church. Mrs. Eddy's article, quote, "Now and Then," end quote, Miscellany, page 12, which appeared 2 weeks later, began this theme that, quote, "now is the accepted time," end quote. To the students, her article pertained to the building of the extension of the Mother Church, but the Leader's thought and words were ever embracing the spiritual, quote, "structure of truth and love," end quote. Science and Health, page 583. To build a temple, the spiritual spire of which will reach the stars with divine overtures, holy harmony reverberating through all cycles of systems and spheres. This certainly refers to her, quote, "church universal and triumphant," end quote. Her church not made with hands. What else could reverberate, quote, "through all cycles of systems and spheres," end quote. The divinity course in her home, far more than the structure of stone in Boston, was building this, quote, "spiritual spire, which will reach the stars," end quote. The main thing Mrs. Eddy was teaching her students at Pleasant View was how to watch. What is watching? It is watching every thought that comes to consciousness and making every thought conform to the laws of God. Gilbert Carpenter wrote, "In the home of Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, those whom she called mental workers were instructed to sit quietly in their rooms and watch and pray, usually for an hour at a time. These periods she called watches, after the master's query, quote, 'Could ye not watch with me 1 hour?'" End quote. It was her custom to furnish these workers with written texts or outlines of thought, which she expected them to amplify. The mental workers in her home learned to take the fragmentary outlines which she furnished them daily and to use them as mental, quote, "primers," end quote. As water is used to prime a pump and to start the well flowing, to open a flood of spiritual and inspirational thought that truly was reflected from God. In addition to the written outlines, the Leader gave verbal instructions to the workers in her household. On the 26th of May, she said, quote, "If you take up arsenic, you will hit it in most of the cases in 1903, End quote. On that day, the conversation was on drought, and Mrs. Eddy, missing Clara Shannon, said, quote, "Clara could bring the clouds and the rain." End quote. Then she gave them a beautiful lesson on rain, which was followed by several others on weather on subsequent days. On May 30th, Lyda Fitzpatrick recorded, quote, "There was a nice quiet rain all night, and Mrs. Eddy said, 'We brought the rain.' This broke the thought of drought." End quote. On May 31st, the leader told her students, quote, "I never argued until I began teaching students and had to meet the thought where it stood. I have been made the way-shower." End quote. Her words, which would elevate their work, were, quote, "Now drop arguing and hold to God. I used to do my healing with God is all." End quote. It was the 29th of May when she told them that no one else would ever have as much to meet as she had. Mrs. Fitzpatrick recorded the leader's words, "I am only a windowpane through which the light comes. You are helping yourselves more than you help me, for I am helping you. The discoverer has to discover the way to meet these things. You will not have that to do. You are learning now how to meet them. I have had to discover it."